And now, sports and other stuff. The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
We failed today. We should have walked off this field with at least a point.
Long distance blast, and it's Alvin Jones! One for the legend books!
This is time of the year, you know, for mold around Chicago.
Faked off the goaltender, and the Blues take a 2-1 lead. And Grabner, a shorthanded breakaway. Here he comes, and a save by Carter Hutton!
He's run the football all his life. I'm real excited to have him.
Jaguars were uniquely confident in their corners.
I'm one of the best that's ever done it. And the best that's ever played this position.
By response, I mean thought with action.
We can't take a poll and see what all 53 guys want to do and check off their wish lists and all that.
We have to be on time and be on schedule with manageable down and distances and situations.
He's a clown, honestly.
Offensively, you know, we did some good things.
Bad as an offensive performance as I've ever been a part of, and it's inexcusable.
Wishbones come back split T, so bringing it out. Thanks, guys.
This week, in terms of our next opponent, to add a little icing on the top of that challenge.
Not really quite sure how you add icing on the top of a particular challenge, but the opening montage bringing us into hour number two, Fox Sports Midwest. Of course, you had Bruce Arena in there, Arizona Cardinals, Mike Tomlin, Ben Roethlisberger, Bill Belichick, Cam Newton, James Harden, head coach Barry Odom, Bruce Jones, or Butch Jones, rather, in that whole mix of our opening montage as we get rolling with our number two of the Closers. Welcome in alongside Jay Sparks. I am George Young, and the soothing tones.
The brass bonanza.
The brass. Bringing in a man who carries a lot of brass with him. Bill Conley from Rock M Nation. You'll find him on Twitter at SBN_BillC. Also writes for Rock M Nation and the SB Family of Nations, where you find all the college previews, which I'm sure now are worth their weight in gold. Every single one of them, incredibly well-researched and highly accurate, right?
Sure. Yes, definitely.
So far in this season, I know we asked you last week, but now you've had a couple of more games coming in, including a big win on the road by Iowa State over Oklahoma, where they planted the flag at the OU. You've had Georgia now sitting there at 6-0. They're at number four. Has the team really stood out to you as being a surprise in college football so far?
Well, you know, I think the level that Georgia has hit was at least a little bit of a surprise. It wasn't hard at all to figure out how they might end up playing at a kind of a top 15 level, but they've been above that so far. Now, you know, the newcomers to playing at that level, it's been a few years since they hit that mark. You know, we'll see if they can maintain it. Mm-hmm. I assume they probably will on Saturday. But, you know, overall, I think they've been the upside that they've shown has been at least a little bit surprising here. Obviously, you know, the other good teams, Alabama, Penn State, Clemson, of course, Washington. The fact that they're really good isn't really a surprise, but the fact that Georgia's this good so far, it's impressive.
You know, I know it's a little under the radar. It might not be the most marquee of matchups this weekend, but I've got my eye on this UCF-Navy matchup. You've got two undefeated teams, both of which probably are not used to playing at that kind of a level, both out of the American. And I mean, how do these two teams get together in, you know, in week 6-7 of the season and both undefeated and ready to do this?
Yeah, Central Florida's a surprise. I mean, Navy, you know, has been good for a while, different levels of good, obviously. But, you know, the fact that Central Florida is not only undefeated, but has looked the way they've looked. I mean, you think about Memphis, pretty good team, destroyed Memphis. Maryland beat Texas, beat Minnesota, destroyed Maryland. You know, Cincinnati, beating them by four touchdowns in three quarters. They've left nothing to chance here, and I think that's very, very impressive. Again, we'll see if they can maintain it. But Scott Frost has been playing really, really, really well, and that might earn him a few million dollars in extra salary in some other location here in a few more months. We'll see.
Oh?
I mean, you know, no breaking news or anything, but he's going to be a hot name for a lot of jobs, especially one that might come open that happens to be his alma mater.
Oh, well, what do you know on that one? As soon as they find themselves an athletic director, Bill Conley, Rock M Nation with us here on the Closers. Part of that opening montage was Lincoln Riley talking about how they've got to bounce back as the head coach of Oklahoma and the team from their loss at home to Iowa State. You've got Tom Herman with Texas, and they showed out well against USC, but otherwise it's been a rocky first couple of weeks for Tom Herman, supposedly the savior of the Longhorn Empire. What happens with the Red River the Red River Showdown?
Rivalry, the Red River,
Rivalry, yes. What happens with that?
You know, I mean, it is kind of a weird thing. We were joking on podcasting, played somebody on SB Nation earlier today that, you know, Tom Herman was probably real mad when OU lost to Iowa State because that was going to be their job. You know, a Tom Herman team tends to play very, very well as the underdog and sneaking up on teams. But I mean, I think they're doing just fine. You know, they're playing with a freshman quarterback. Obviously, their quarterback situation is a little bit on the unsettled side. Their offense still has some questions, but they've rebounded dramatically on the defensive side of the ball compared to where they were when they were playing Maryland to start the year. And I mean, I think they're a unique test in that they're better at defense than offense. That's not necessarily the case for most Big 12 teams right now or in any year of the last decade, I guess. But they are a pretty sturdy team. And so really maybe I guess the game now comes down to how OU responds. I think they'll respond fine to last week. Last week just had we've seen it happen before with, you know, Missouri and just about anybody else. You're a favorite. You're kind of looking ahead to the next game. You immediately jump out to a couple touchdown lead and you throw it into cruise control and it backfires. I think that's basically what happened. They fell asleep. Iowa State kept coming at them and they weren't ready to handle that once they had thrown it into cruise control.
Is there any indication, and I don't know if you see it from doing, you know, week by week stats and compiling things, but is there any indication of a 2007 in the works? I mean, can you tell when the volatility, that there's going to be a whole bunch of you know, big time losses down the stretch, or is that something that just kind of emerges on its own?
Right. I mean, that's kind of the god of odds and probabilities having some fun in the end. But, you know, I do think that what we've seen out of the top teams, Clemson is a team that goes up 14 points and then just kind of hits, like I just said about AU, they hit cruise control. They don't necessarily put teams away. They let things linger. You know, when you're playing with a pointy ball that bounces whichever way it wants to bounce, that can get you into trouble because you're always just a couple of bounces away from maybe getting upset. So, you know, that's been a little bit of a concern to me regarding Clemson. Alabama just showed that they are still vulnerable to falling behind schedule and not being able to dig out. You know, they really tried to mess around and make something of the Texas A&M game. It was a nice reminder that those, the two most proven programs, are vulnerable. And if we're going to have a 2007, it's going to require those teams to lose at least once, probably twice. So, you know, if we're always on the lookout for the next 07, I will say that, you know, Iowa State beating Oklahoma for the second time in like 56 years, you know, that's a pretty crazy way to get things started if we want to go down that road.
Bill Conley, Rock M Nation with a zero on the closing. Follow him on Twitter at @SBN_BillC. Urban Meyer, Ohio State, had an issue with the targeting call over the weekend. Head coach Barry Odom sort of kind of had an issue when his player, DeMarcus Acy, was ejected from the Kentucky game. Is there a fix for this targeting penalty? Account for the receiver, running back, quarterback, whatever it is, dipping down low, and then because of the forward momentum of the defensive player striking them in the helmet?
Yeah, DeMarcus Acy still led with his head. Mm-hmm. You know, he still came at him with his head, and we're in a period of time where we are really trying to change the fundamentals of tackling. And I think I think teams are starting to get that figured out to a certain degree. But in the meantime, we're just going to have to live with a lot of these awkward calls. And the bottom line is AC came charging in with his head, and that's how he ended up making helmet-to-helmet contact. So if he hadn't, if he had been playing a little more straight up, then, well, I mean, A, he wouldn't have been able to try to hit as hard, which mm-hmm. is definitely what he's trying to do. He's trying to send a little bit of a message there. But that's what you're trying to eliminate. You're trying to basically do the whole quote-unquote rugby tackling thing where you're riding guys to the ground more than sending a message with a big hit. So, yeah, it's just an awkward time. I think 15 years from now, fundamentals have changed. We teach, junior high kids how to tackle a little differently. Then you start to see the results. But in the meantime, this is what you're going to have. And I don't think there's another way around it.
Okay. Keeping along the lines of the big hit, this is your opportunity now. U.S. men's national team falls 2-1 to Trinidad and Tobago. They had a 97% chance of advancing into the 2018 World Cup in Russia. Instead, they found that 3% nugget that sent them home for the 2018 World Cup. First time since 1986. Bill Connolly, Rock M Nation, noted footy fan, as he travels all over the world covering footy. Now is your chance to vent. I pull the plug for thee.
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of good venting. I don't know if I have anything to add to probably what Jay's already told you in commercial breaks. But
yes, my ear is bent.
It was amazing to watch because basically not only did Trinidad, U.S. did score. So you needed Trinidad and Tobago to score twice. You needed Panama down to Costa Rica to score twice. And you needed Honduras down to Mexico to score twice unanswered. And for all those things to just go boom, 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 like almost in a row. Obviously, Trinidad went up before the U.S. scored and everything. But all those things had to happen. If one of them doesn't, then the U.S. is going to the World Cup, or at least going to the playoff to play Australia for the World Cup. So that was just, from a mathematical standpoint, it was kind of a marvel of an hour to watch that all unfold the way it did. But, you know, it's going to be really, really interesting to see what happens here, because when you have a comprehensive failure, I just said all the things that had to go wrong last night. Well, think about all the things that had to go wrong for the U.S. to be in that position in the first place, mm-hmm. in terms of management hires and the tactical oddities that came with that at times, and all the lineup selections and everything. But then also the development or lack thereof of certain players, where you ended up in a situation where you had to ride certain important and so in some cases aging players down the stretch here. You know, there's apparently not a goalkeeper under 36 or whatever that's worthy of a shot, apparently. But all the things that had to happen, if you are a decision maker and you're trying to fix U.S. soccer, depending on who that person is, you can look at that and say, we need a, you know, bottom to top, we need a restructuring of everything. Or you can say this one specific thing: if we hire a new manager, everything else is great. Or if we, you know, develop these guys a little differently, then we don't need to make any other changes. You know, you can see whatever you want to see when this many things goes wrong. And we'll see. I don't know. I don't know what they do for sure, but it was a fluke that, I guess you could say, it was a fluke that you could see coming from a year ago, and it all played out exactly like it needed to.
Jay, you were leaning forward like you had something to add.
No, he's,
I would hope so.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, he's very right on. I mean, there's not one problem, and there's not one fix. And anyone who says so is on snake oil. And you know, you this is a big complex problem. So we'll see more of this.
And you make one fix, you probably make it in 2022 and everything's fine. But, you know, I guess it depends on your goals here. If the goal is just to make the World Cup, then yeah, let's fix a couple things. We'll be all right. Everything will go on as planned. But this proved how far the U.S. is away from anything more than that. And we'll see if the people have the wherewithal. The problem is, I mean, Sunil Gulati and the people who are in charge of U.S. soccer are really good at making money, which means they're really good at making the very important people happy, and that makes me worried that they're going to just think this is one small little patch away from being just fine again, and that's not a very satisfactory answer, I don't think.
Okay, well, I'm going to grab some snake oil, and we'll come back for a second segment where we're going to talk about a team that probably could use a lot of snake oil, and that would be the Missouri Tigers. You up for that?
Sure.
All right, welling with excitement, Bill Connolly from Rock M Nation will be back with us as we roll on in hour number two.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
And welcome back. We roll on here in hour number two, segment number two, with Rock M Nation's Bill Connolly. Follow him on Twitter again at @SBN_BillC. So we've done all the national stuff. We've kvetched over the U.S. men's national team in segment number one. Now it's time to turn our attention inward, and we can begin to kvetch about the Missouri Tigers. Moral victory worthwhile or worthless against the Kentucky Wildcats last weekend?
I mean, it's worthwhile in that it wasn't another Purdue game, you know.
And so great, okay.
It was a step forward, and, you know, we're not in a situation where, you know, you're fighting for a division title or anything. So technically you're looking for improvement, and now that's, you know, I jokingly called it a statistical moral victory when, yes, I was going through the stats yesterday. But that's what it was. It was a step forward. It wasn't enough of a step forward. And it's, you know, Missouri's going to have to take about another 9 steps forward to compete for 60 minutes with Georgia on Saturday. But really, you know, as I said over the last few weeks in a couple different ways, you know, this is, it's Barry Odom's second season, and it takes a lot for you to not get a third season. And I think if Missouri takes a couple more steps forward over the course of the next seven games or so, then that'll probably get it. He'll probably get his third year, even though that's not probably going to end up with a very good record no matter what. But, yeah, we just need to see growth. We saw a little. We still saw a bunch of scoring opportunities blown. We still saw some iffy special teams. We still saw some just kind of positioning and mental breakdowns on defense that cost Missouri big time. So, yeah, step forward. Need a lot more.
How aggravating or surprising is the special teams issue? I mean, we know about Corey Fatone, and he's just been just lacing it inside the 20 every chance he has to do so. But you've got a top-ranked kicker in Tucker McCann on scholarship, which doesn't normally happen with a kicker, and he struggled with point afters. I'm not sure that the staff has any confidence in him kicking a field goal if the money is on the table. And, you know, listen, you kick it, you get the money. And kickoffs, you know, you hope to get that into the end zone for the touchback.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the Kentucky game was it was a new thing. You know, it was suddenly, you know, the long snapper who has been just pretty much perfect and completely forgettable in the way you want your long snapper to be. All of a sudden, he yanks two bad snaps, one semi-bad and one really bad on the field goals all of a sudden. So you can't even really say it was McCann this time, although he did miss one in between that he ended up, you know, managing to leave his leg out there and get run into. So he got another chance and he made that one. So it was, you know, he's still shaky, we'll say. But yeah, I mean, all of a sudden it was a new issue. And you know, you can, I guess, be encouraged by that. It wasn't necessarily the same thing. It was another fluky little random thing. But my goodness, we've had every single fluky little random thing possible in special teams over the last, you know, 8 to 10 games or 12 games or whatever. And, you know, maybe it's good. We're running out of things to randomly be bitten by. And maybe at that point, everything's great. That's what I'll go with.
Okay.
Very good. Is it? You know, obviously on a team that's 1-4, 1-5, as this goes along for this team, you know, is there a skill set player or a skill position player that's still overperforming? Is anybody out there showing off or doing something that's worth, you know, what the stock that's put into them?
Well, I think I think the major thing with the skill position right at now, and well, actually, I'll focus on the receivers. The running backs were great, other than DeMario Crockett managing to fumble. I swear every single one of his fumbles has been in opposing territory at an important moment. But regardless, the way I try to address the receiving core yesterday, you know, you look at the per target numbers, you know, just Emmanuel Hall, Jonathan Johnson, and Jamon Moore. Like on a per target basis, they were incredible on Saturday. But it feels like they're still all kind of a one trick thing. Jamon Moore is probably the most well rounded at this point. But Emmanuel Hall can go deep. Jonathan Johnson can catch screen passes, get one step on his guy and go a long way. Or you know, he had a nice little route across the field, downfield. He can go deep or go short, I guess. Intermediates. Missouri doesn't really have a receiver who's really good at the intermediate routes, and Locke has kind of struggled still with the shorter and intermediate routes. He throws an amazing deep ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, that laser beam he threw to Jamon Moore towards the end of the first half was one of the better passes you'll ever see. But there's this giant in-between that Missouri still struggles with in the passing game, and it's really – you know, it's obviously the next step in development. We'll see if they can take it. I don't know. You know, they haven't yet, so I don't know if they will.
Yeah, it always seems like on the intermediate route, his receiver needs a ladder. Just
right, or they're just not running a very good route. Yeah. We don't know which. We just know that the throw's not really where the receiver is, and whoever's to blame there is. You know, it can go in a lot of the blame can go in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I want to. We'll exit this Kentucky weekend here with this question. Did what we saw on Saturday, how much of that was Missouri actually figuring things out, and how much of that was Kentucky just knowing that all we got to do is outscore these fellas?
Well, I mean, we knew that Kentucky was having some secondary issues, something that Missouri couldn't really punish against Kentucky last year. They were able to punish it this year, and so it kind of fit the mold that Kentucky is struggling with downfield passing, and Missouri remembered finally that they're good at downfield passing. They did it a little bit. They were able to protect Drew Locke after that first hit. But you know, it was obviously at least a little bit opponent specific. I do think, I mean, the bye though is a chance for you to kind of take a step back and you know, reassess what you're good at and what you're not good at. And we saw, you know, a Missouri offense that at least kind of remembered. It seemed like, especially against Purdue, they had no idea what they were good at, what they wanted to do, what they could do, anything. Auburn a little bit the same, although that was more of a case of probably just being a little outmatched. But, you know, I at the very least, we got a reminder that Missouri is good at some things offensively, and we got to see it. So there's that.
We've seen some interesting games in the SEC. Florida, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Arkansas. It happens to be the last four games Missouri wraps this season up. Let's go ahead and with full confidence and vigor, put Georgia in that loss column. So you're going to hit Idaho homecoming with a five-game skid and sitting there at 1-5. Then you have UConn road trip, and then you wrap up with the four SEC games I mentioned. Can Missouri steal a game or two down this stretch and at least look at that record at the end of the year and go, all right, it wasn't totally awful?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Kentucky is a team, like, they're a weird team this year. They nearly beat Florida. They did beat South Carolina. They nearly lost to Eastern Michigan. They thought about losing to Eastern Kentucky. So it's hard to get a good read for Kentucky. But this is, bottom line is, this is a team that came within one play of beating Florida, and Missouri came within one play of beating them. So, you know, just think of it in that kind of transitive sense. And I mean, it's not like Missouri's that far away. I would expect in the end, the most likely scenario here is Missouri beating Idaho, beating UConn, and then beating somebody in the month of November to finish 4-8. The odds are pretty, are at least on the table for Kentucky, or for Tennessee, and for Arkansas, and for Vanderbilt, and for Florida. And I would bet that they get one of those. And so then, man, that's almost kind of the worst case scenario, though, if you think about it, you know, because you didn't improve dramatically. You didn't get worse to the point where you have a new coach. You're just, you enter, Barry Odom enters year three on a very hot seat in this big limbo that he can't really recruit to at all. And that's kind of probably what the most likely scenario is at this point, which, I mean, whatever. There's still a chance of a third year leap, I guess.
Is there a chance for a third year? I mean, this coaching staff's got to start looking around, and that will begin to adversely impact your recruiting as if the record hasn't already done so.
Well, sure. I mean, the second year is your most likely chance for a giant step forward, but there are always, you know, just Eastern Michigan, a Missouri opponent. Eastern Michigan last year did it in the third year. Kentucky did it in their, like, the fourth year with Mark Stoops. And so it can absolutely happen. It's just, you are kind of racing against the clock because you're no longer able to sell whatever you were selling, whatever promise, whatever vision you were selling at first. There's been no proof of that, and it becomes harder to recruit, and you have to rely more and more on your talent development or talent identification as opposed to, you know, being able to bring in four-star guys. And so it does get harder. It doesn't get impossible. But, man, the biggest thing I think for Odom moving forward, assuming he does get a third year here, not enough guys improved in the offseason compared to, you know, where they finished last year, where they are now. You know, we just haven't seen kind of the step forward for some guys that we thought we were going to see. And if you're recruiting in the bottom part of the SEC, you can make up ground if you're developing, but you got to develop. And we haven't seen the staff do it nearly as well as the last one did yet.
How's Rock'em Nation taking this? How with the general feel, if you were to take a poll and you know, can we survive? Are we willing to survive this or, you know, burn it all down to the ground? You know, where's the Rock'em Nation fan base on this?
Basketball is starting soon.
Okay, not said. All right, well.
I mean, yeah, that's it. You know, you just look at it. I mean, obviously, I see the traffic numbers and everything, and it's been the same thing for about three straight years with football now. It's, you know, full head of steam in September. Everything's optimistic. Everything's interesting. And then you just, I mean, it gets harder to write. It gets harder to read. It gets harder to everything when you're kind of reacting to losses over and over again, and the loss looks similar in certain ways. Each time it gets kind of, I understand why traffic kind of tends to suffer a little bit. It's just the way of the world.
Kirby Smart noted earlier this week, and you've got it on Rock'em Nation in a piece that you wrote. He said, Missouri, they stop the other teams, don't stop them. Missouri stops themselves. And we've seen that not just last year, but now this year when they're minus 10 in the turnovers, and the turnovers seem to be at incredibly inopportune times. They always turn into points for the other team. It's the Rocky and Bullwinkle thing, and you're always finding that lion who hasn't been fed in a week. What if you're the coaching staff, how do you get the guys to focus on ball security without becoming this all-consuming snake that will wrap you up and eat you alive, and then you're not able to do anything else?
Yeah, the turnover thing is really tough because, I mean, there are certain ways to obviously teach ball security and everything else, but you're dealing with that, and you're also dealing with what has been some amazing bad luck with fumbles so far. There are something like 13 fumbles so far in Missouri games, and Missouri's recovered two of them. Mm-hmm. That is not going to be sustained over a long period of time, but it is. There has been an element of luck here, but Missouri has also had 9 of those 13 fumbles. They have fumbled twice as much as their opponents. And so, yeah, the Kirby Smart line was good, and it was a nice reminder that Missouri is actually good at some things offensively, but it was also a little bit, I mean, he's from the Nick Saban school, talk up your opponent and make sure nobody's underestimating anybody. Missouri does get stopped sometimes, but there's no question that from a turnovers perspective, like the ability of Missouri to make the key mistake at the key time has been pretty remarkable over the last year, or a couple of years, really.
Pretty on point.
Yeah, stunning in its consistency. Bill Conley, Rock M Nation, as we wrap this up. Last week, we set the over-under at 15.5, and you went over. Congratulations, sir. You picked up the victory.
Thank you.
Yes, at least somebody picked up a win last week. Missouri certainly did. This week, the Missouri Tigers are riding a 4-game slide. We'll visit the fourth-ranked and 6-0 Georgia Bulldogs. And down in Athens, I'm assuming that there will be more than 15 points aggregate scored between these two teams this time around. Setting the over-under, sir, at 17.5.
Under.
Going under.
I'm thinking 10. I'm thinking 38-10 sounds about right here.
Ooh, going under.
So I'm going to go under this time.
Okay. All right. Which means if you take the line, which is 31, you're in.
That's right. I'm picking Missouri. I'm a homer.
Okay. All right. Well, you continue to be a homer, and we'll continue to bet Jay's money. Because that's what we do around
here.
What?
Man, it's always my money.
It's very consistent.
I'm picking on the new guy.
That's right. Yeah, that's what we're doing. All right, Bill, thank you for the time, sir. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right, thank you.
All right, you're very welcome. Bill Conley, Rock M Nation. We'll be right back.
The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK at News Talk 1400 KFRU.
Gets it back to Stasny, wide open, and a shot that goes wide. They score! Banked off the goaltender, and the Blues take a 2-1 lead. I think Shen will get the goal.
That is courtesy of Fox Sports Midwest. Yesterday, the Blues toppled the New York Rangers at MSG 3-1, and they are now 4-0.
The couch was comfortable.
Was it?
The dom was cold.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice. It's good.
Yeah. Do you feel good about that one?
The $400,000. I think it's a good investment.
Okay, good investment. Yeah. Glad you. I for one, am glad you made it back to the show on time.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So what'd you think?
Yeah.
Couches are good. Couches are good. You said.
Yeah.
Dom,
I mean, and you get
properly chilled.
You get to root for the Blues.
Okay.
And see the Blues. Big win.
Yeah.
It's great.
Excellent. Excellent. Congratulations, by the way, to Jason Hampton. He will be going to Kansas Speedway next weekend, both Saturday and Sunday, as he has claimed today's Kansas Speedway NASCAR packet, a pair of tickets for Saturday and a pair of tickets for Sunday. We have another two pair for tomorrow. One pair for Saturday, pair for Sunday. We'll give those away during the show tomorrow, and then Friday, and then Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So if you win those tickets, make sure that you can go. Because, you know, you'd hate to grab those tickets and somebody else would have been able to benefit from them.
Right.
So, Blues are 4-0-0. They are the only team in the NHL with 4 wins and no losses and no ties. They have until Thursday. They'll play Florida Thursday. All in all, this is an interesting team, Jay, when you think about they're missing some key pieces. This early in the season already, on the disabled list. We talked with Chris Raby a couple weeks ago with the Blues preview, that, by the way, is on our podcast page at KFRU.com, KLIK1240.com. But so far,
Mike Yeo's got him rolling. Looking good. And you pick up a couple of really key road victories early in the season. You open up the season at Pittsburgh. You come home for your one game. Woo!
Yeah, right.
Thanks, bye. We'll pick up our laundry and all the rest of that later on. And then you go out on the road to New York, you beat the Islanders, then you beat the Rangers. And I think the Rangers was probably a better win in some respects for the St. Louis Blues, because not only were you missing a couple of players, but you didn't have Jake Allen in goal.
Right.
You had Carter Hutton, and Carter Hutton came up huge.
Yes.
In that game. Part of his 33 saves included a breakaway on a shorthanded attempt when the Blues were up 2-1, and that would have tied the game late third. Then you don't know what's going to happen, because now the Blues are looking, oh, crap, we gave up another third period lead, da-da-da-da-da, all the rest of that. But Hutton shows up huge, and the Blues get an empty netter from Sobotka, and they go on for the 3-1 victory. You got to like it, man. If you're a Blues fan, you got to like where your team's at right now.
Well, and especially with, I mean, I know the Blackhawks are there. They're have a decent start to the, but the rest of the Central has been garbage so far. You've been putting some, you've been putting some distance there already. I mean, it's way too early to be looking at the standings. I get that, but it's always better to be on top than
not
on the
bottom. Our favorite game is small sample size.
Correct.
Yeah.
But no, this is a Blues team that seems to be the players who need to be stepping up.
Mm-hmm.
To fill in for the players who are absent right now are doing so in really fine fashion, and they are getting a lot of contributions. And I mean, that only bodes well. We talk about like teams that, you know, have a lot of injuries one year and a lot of the youngsters get to play. Well, then they seem a lot stronger the next year. Huh. I wonder why that is, because all your backups got to play and got a little better with that first team, you know, with first team run. So it's good to see success coming while you've got people filling in.
Yeah, and they're going to wrap up the month of October at home with a game against the Columbus Blue Jackets on the 28th and then the LA Kings on the 30th. But, you know, at Florida, at Tampa Bay, home for the Blackhawks this weekend or next Wednesday. That's going to be a huge game. Then back out on the road to Colorado and Vegas, home for Calgary, out on the road to Carolina, and then Columbus and LA to wrap up the month of October. And, you know, there was thought this year when you started looking at all the injuries for the Blues that 3, maybe 4 wins, especially the amount of time that you're spending on the road, 3 or 4 wins in the month of October was going to be a good month.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
You got those 4 wins.
Yes.
Already in the pocket. Not go out and get more.
Go get some more.
That's right. Go out and do it again, as we say about high school football, college football, basketball, da-da-da-da. Go out and do it again. And they've got an opportunity at Thursday night. Florida Panthers and Fox Sports Midwest will be carrying all the games the rest of this month except for the Blackhawks game, which you'll get on NBC Sports Net. But so far, Jake Allen, 3-0, and Carter Hutton, 1-0. And I think I got that because it was a great call, actually. From Fox Sports Midwest. Yeah, Carter Hutton stopping the breakaway.
What a save by Lundqvist on Stastny! And Grabner, a shorthanded breakaway! Here he comes, and a save by Carter Hutton! What a save, shorthanded!
That was about 5 or 6 minutes after a flurry of saves, where he's sprawling around like a fidget spinner.
Yeah.
And keeps the Rangers out of the net. So Carter Hutton, a nice job in relief, and that seems to be the plan right now for Mike Yao. Jake Allen, a couple of games, and if it's back-to-back or you've got to travel in there and he's already logged a lot of minutes, then you're going to go ahead and give Carter Hutton a chance to spell Jake Allen, and that'll keep Jake Allen fresh, and hopefully this year you don't see that slump that we saw last year where he couldn't stop a bowling ball.
Yeah,
at times last year.
Yeah, it got to a point there where it was pretty bad. I mean, and listen, this is a great chance for Carter Hutton. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is how young goalies gain the momentum, and we don't want to ever see him leave because he's on the Blues.
Right.
But this is how young goalies get their chance, and so far, aces.
Yep. So far, so good. Blues 4-0-0, a 5-4 overtime win against the Penguins and a shootout victory over the Islanders, and tucked in between there a 4-2 win over Dallas and a 3-1 win over the Islanders. So up next for the note, Thursday night at Florida, take on the Florida Predators, and 7-30, the drop of the puck, or 6:30 rather, the drop of the puck on Fox Sports Midwest. About 1,500 tickets available. Seriously? $6.
Okay.
Dude, that's not a bad deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. All right. We'll explore that. If there's dead air when we come back,
we've gone to the game.
We're on our way to Florida for the game.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
Welcome back to the Closers here as we wrap up hour number two of a just a dreary, cool Wednesday afternoon. We're supposed to be back up in the 80s, though, so have no fear.
Okay.
The summer will be back again.
Yeah.
After a brief vacation. It was tired. It's worked really hard this summer.
It did.
Yeah. So it'll be back soon.
It was unrelenting there for a while.
Yeah, it kind of was. Although it was getting also all uncomfortable as we were continuing on with our no pants summer. Today you needed them.
Yeah.
Baseball today probably needed them. They probably also need, like, warmer hand warmers and all the rest of that. Steven Strasburg out there today, and he is dealing right now. The Washington Nationals lead the Chicago Cubs. It is 1-0. Jake Arrieta was good early, allowed just the one run. But Steven Strasburg, both teams have an error, by the way. Steven Strasburg, here is his line so far. 7 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 12 strikeouts. 2 walks, 106 pitches.
So what you're saying is go, like, eat mold.
Yeah. Sure. I guess that's where penicillin came from, right? Mold, bread mold.
Apparently it's where good pitchers come from, too.
Well, just today.
Right.
Maybe he rubbed it on his elbow.
Yeah. Well, whatever he did.
Do it again.
It's working.
Right? Yeah. Tomorrow, if the Nationals win, you get a travel day on Thursday, and then the series would conclude Friday in Washington, and that would be Max Scherzer heading to the hill. On the mound now is Lesta, John Lesta on the mound for the Cubs. Arrieta got the start, 4 innings, two hits, 1 run. And 4 strikeouts and 5 walks. Once again, his control was an issue. He threw 4 innings, and this sounds like a Cardinals line, 90 pitches in 4 innings.
Efficiency.
No, not really. No. Not seeing it at all. But Bob Nightingale from USA Today says, unbelievable performance by Strasburg, 12 strikeouts. How good would the dude be if he were 100% healthy? How good would the dude be if he got run support?
It's the National League. What's his batting line?
That's the Nationals, though. 0-2.
Well, not even helping himself.
Seems reactionary.
DH in both leagues.
Yes. Yeah. I think that would be a good plan.
Let pitchers pitch. Let hitters hit.
Because that's what they do. Let them do what they do.
Right.
They all have jobs.
Right.
Ned Yost was very clear on this. Everybody has a job to do. And that's why he makes changes at weird moments during the games. Game number two tonight, it is a must win for the Yankees or the Indians. I don't, whichever one you want. If you would like to hear the call from WFAN where they always go, the Yankees win, then you root for the Yankees. If you're sick and tired of hearing that call.
Or if you're a decent human being.
Wait a minute, I was going to say then you root for the Indians, but then you threw in if you're a decent human being.
Right.
You root for Cleveland.
Yeah.
And Chief Wahoo.
Against the Yankees? Yes.
Okay.
I'm just talking about tonight. This is not tonight?
This is not a general thing?
No.
Okay.
It's just tonight.
Okay. Yankees, White Sox, who do you pull for?
A meteor.
Yankees, Indians tonight, 6:08. Yeah, or 7:08, rather, on FS1, CC Sabathia and Corey Kluber, a matchup of former Cy Young Award winners. And that series is tied at 2 apiece. The good news for the Cleveland Indians is both teams have won their home games.
Mm-hmm.
So Cleveland started out winning their first two at home, then losing the two to the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. The bad news for Cleveland in their last 19 elimination games. You need a drink of water?
No, I'm good.
You choking on something? Choking on a lead, maybe?
Maybe.
Yeah? They're 3-16.
Eek.
They've lost their last five elimination games, which happens to include last year's Game 7.
Do they know about the mold?
Well, they're trying to break the mold. Trying to break the mold.
But the mold, I mean...
Oh, that mold, not the...
Right.
Not the mold of losing elimination games.
Yeah.
Okay. Probably not. Probably not.
Okay. Well.
Just scoop it off the top of Lake Erie.
Right.
You'll be fine. Just, you know, rub a little bit where it hurts.
It's like Windex in My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Yeah.
A little Windex will clear everything
up. That's right. Including your windows.
Yep.
7-08 again tonight. And that, meanwhile, the two teams that are waiting on the conclusion of these two series, the LA Dodgers in the National League and the Houston Astros in the American League, sitting there, patiently waiting.
Getting their starting rotations
in order. The Dodgers will host game number one. And then the Cleveland Indians, should they win tomorrow, would host the Houston Astros. Because this year, the Major League Baseball has decided to join the 21st century, and the teams with the best records will be hosting.
No matter what.
Right.
Yeah.
There's no all-star game. There's no none of this other stuff.
Sure.
Floating around. So yeah. The team with the best record will be hosting. And right now, the Cleveland Indians and the LA Dodgers, the teams with the two best records. And if it were the World Series between LA and Cleveland, it would be LA that would be hosting.
Mm-hmm.
Because they finished up with the best record. 104 wins. Those two teams combined for 206 wins. Houston, 101.
That's a lot of 100-game winners in a season.
That's a lot of 100-game winners. Thanks to our guests today. Really do appreciate all of their time. As always, Gabe Yarman from PowerMizzou.com, Bill Conley from Rock M Nation, and also Bob Burchard, Athletic Director at Columbia College. Jay Sparks, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And as always, please be careful out there.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.